Imagine you're an online merchant, right?
Yeah.
And you've just sourced this incredibly cool vintage wash denim jacket.
Oh, yeah. Like the kind you really want to show off the details on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you upload a photo of it to this brand new AI image generation platform, and you click a template button that's labeled material breakdown.
Because you're expecting what, like a crisp, zoomed in macro shot of the heavy stitching.
Yeah, or maybe highlighting the texture of the denim weave, something like that. But the progress bar fills up, the screen refreshes, and the AI hands you an image of like six sparkling faceted gemstones.
Just beautifully floating in a dark, empty void.
Right. You put in a denim jacket and you literally got back a jewelry constellation.
It is honestly the absolute definition of software architecture working perfectly on paper while, producing complete unhinged absurdity in reality.
Well, welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at a really fascinating developer log from April 23rd, 2026. It's titled Walking Back the Abstraction.
Which is part three of the Building Shishuan series, right?
Yeah, exactly. And at first glance, you might think a hyper-technical engineering post about an AI image generation platform is like just for coders.
Sure, it sounds super dense.
But the mission today is to unpack this, because hidden inside this single kind of hilarious software bug is a literal masterclass on product design.
And, to you listening, whether you're building AI tools yourself or managing a team, or if you just love peering behind the curtain of how complex things are made, this deep dive will completely change how you think.
It really dismantles the illusion of like what we call safe choices,
Yeah,
right?
and it reveals why different industries don't just have different products, but they actually speak fundamentally different visual languages.
So the incident that started this whole cascade of revelations is, of course, that denim to gemstone bug. And to understand how a multi-million dollar code base makes that kind of mistake,
You have to look back at the developer's previous iteration.
right, which they call part two. In that earlier build, the developer created what they thought was this flawless abstraction. They built one single AI pipeline.
Just one. It had exactly six image slots, and it was supposed to cover seven entirely different product categories, like fashion, beauty, jewelry, home goods.
Which, I mean, the underlying theory there is actually quite elegant.
It is, because the developer assumed that the psychology of selling a product online is, universal.
Right. Like, regardless of what you're selling, you generally need the same angles of persuasion, a first impression shot, maybe a lifestyle context shot.
A quality proof shot, yeah.
Yeah.
So instead of reinventing the software for every single category, they just created those six universal slots.
But, they fell into this trap with what they call the label layer. Because, okay, let's unpack this. They took those six universal slots and just customized the text on the buttons for each category.
Right, so for jewelry, slot two was labeled Gem Constellation.
But for fashion, that exact same slot was labeled Material Breakdown. And for beauty, it was Ingredient Breakdown. Three different labels, but they were all funneling down into the exact same underlying AI prompt.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's like going to an international restaurant and ordering a morning pick-me-up, right? In one country, you get an espresso, but in another, you get a splash of ice water to the face.
That is a perfect analogy. The label translated beautifully, but the underlying function didn't change at all.
Exactly. And the technical reality makes this even more insidious, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The developer points out that this is the nastiest kind of bug you can encounter, because the machine is telling you that nothing is wrong. Every automated safety check passed.
Wait, really? The system didn't flag it at all.
Not at all. The linting tools, the software that scans for typos, found nothing. The type system confirmed the code was completely domain agnostic. To the machine, the math was flawless.
But underneath all that perfect architecture, the actual AI prompt hidden in the code still had jewelry visual language hard-coded directly into it.
Literally, the instructions sent to the image generator read, "Specimen constellation of jewelry shot on dark slate."
Oh, wow. So the system translated the label on the user's screen, but completely ignored what was actually being fed to the artificial intelligence.
Yeah, you can't just swap a label and expect reality to adapt. The abstraction just did not survive contact with the real world.
So, okay, once you find a bug like that, the logical instinct is immediate triage, right? Like, denim is turning into diamonds. We have to patch this leak.
In any normal project management scenario, yeah, you follow a phased approach.
Right. And the original plan here was textbook. Phase one, keep the six universal slots, spend maybe a day adding some code branches to fix the four most broken prompts.
Like the gemstone one.
Exactly. And then launch a beta, gather user data, see what breaks, and adapt. And then phase two, spend a full week building dedicated template sets for each category based on that data.
But the developer looked at that text work plan and completely abandoned it. They threw phase one straight in the trash.
See, I struggle with the developer's decision here. Because, wait, phase one sounds perfectly reasonable. It's textbook engineering.
It feels like it, yeah.
You ship something small, see how people use it, and then commit. Why on earth would you skip the most crucial learning phase?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the developer realized a really harsh truth about their current state. They didn't have any users yet.
Oh, right, because the platform was still in active internal development.
Exactly. And no users means absolutely no user data is coming in. A phased rollout that relies on user data to inform the next step is like a logical fallacy if the users don't exist.
Wow. So launching phase one to, quote, gather data was just entirely a fiction.
It's the psychological trap of the safe iteration. Without incoming data, the quality of your guess in phase one is mathematically identical to the quality of your guess in phase two.
They're both just blind assumptions.
Right. The only actual difference is that phase one generates a mountain of throwaway work. Those little patches written for the beta would literally have to be deleted the moment phase two began.
So it's busy work disguised as prudence. I mean, we do this all the time, don't we?
Oh, constant.
We create these complex plans to feel like we're managing risk when really we're just avoiding the terrifying work of making a definitive choice.
Yeah, the developer realized that without data, phase one wasn't risk management at all. It was just the feeling of risk management.
So they made the brutal call to skip the fake safety and jump straight to phase two. But that introduces a massive new dilemma.
It really does.
Because if you skip the safe beta phase and you jump straight to building the final templates for fashion, beauty, and jewelry, but you still have zero user data, how do you possibly know what to build?
Well, you have to manufacture the data. Since there were no internal users to generate a signal, the developer turned to the public market.
And their methodology here is so ingenious. They deployed three parallel AI research agents to act as digital detectives, right? Just scraping the internet.
Yeah. The first agent was a fashion specialist, looking at industry reports from platforms like Xiaohongshu, which is basically China's primary lifestyle and e-commerce hub.
Kind of a mix of Instagram, Pinterest, and Amazon.
Exactly. The second was a beauty agent, absorbing cosmetic conversion data. And the third was a case study agent, analyzing postmortems of top-performing brands like Lining, Collar Key, and HFP.
But sending AI out to read reports is a great concept until you remember that AI hallucinates. They confidently invent statistics all the time.
Which is a huge problem if you're building your product foundation on it.
Right. How do you mathematically ensure the AI isn't just feeding you a very convincing lie?
So the developer instituted what we can call the 50% rule. It wasn't just a basic fact check.
It was a hard structural constraint.
Yeah, because large language models guess the next most likely word. An isolated agent might just invent a plausible sounding stat. But the developer required at least a 50% topic overlap between these completely independent agents.
So like, if the fashion agent found a stat claiming a certain photo style increased sales by 40%.
And the case study agent didn't see any evidence of that 40% bump in the real world brand data.
It gets thrown out. Completely ignored.
Precisely. Because the probability of two completely siloed models independently hallucinating the exact same incorrect number is practically zero.
That is brilliant. Two agents independently landing on the same figure meant it was verified signal.
And think about how you do your own research in your daily life.
Yeah, if you're listening right now, how often do we run with a single source's claim just because it sounds good or confirms our bias instead of forcing cross-validation?
We do it all the time. But this developer automated their own skepticism. They forced the system to mathematically prove its research before writing a single line of code.
And the verified signal those agents brought back, I mean, it completely shattered that original assumption about universal selling psychology, didn't it?
Oh, completely. The data proved that a one-size-fits-all visual template wasn't just slightly flawed. It was completely detached from commercial reality.
Because, okay, let's look at the fashion category. You would think the best way to sell a jacket is a beautiful, high-res, standalone studio shot of the jacket itself.
But the agents found that standalone studio shots simply do not convert to sales in modern fashion e-commerce. They're effectively dead space.
Wow.
Yeah, instead, 60 to 70% of merchant content on Xiaohongshu is dominated by the OOTD, the outfit of the day.
Which requires a full body shot of a human model situated in a real world environment taking up more than 60% of the frame.
Right, and the case studies backing this up are insane. There's a creator named Lu Xiaobert who built a 2.2 million follower empire without using a single standalone product shot.
Her entire format is outfit grids, like 10 different outfits using this one denim jacket. The context of the human body wearing the item is the product.
Exactly. And then look at the major sportswear brand Lining. During a massive shopping holiday, they moved 300,000 units of a single hot pot puffer jacket.
That's 100 million RMB in gross merchandise value, and they did it using a strict scene plus product plus model composition, no floating ghost mannequins.
And even sizing is communicated differently. If you're selling a sapphire ring, you put a coin next to it for scale.
Right, because jewelry relies on physical scale comparisons. But if you try to put a coin next to a puffer jacket, you look ridiculous.
Exactly. The agents found that in fashion, sizing uses text overlaid directly onto the OOTD photo. Like, model is 163 centimeters wearing a medium.
So fashion demands human context, heavy environmental framing, text overlays. But the moment the agents pivoted to the beauty category,
those rules completely evaporated.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because beauty's top converting format isn't a full body lifestyle shot, and it definitely isn't a zoomed in macro with a coin.
No, it's the swatch grid.
Right. The swatch grid is this highly specific, densely packed visual collage. It's a 5-in-1 composite showing a pristine brand shot of, say, a liquid lipstick alongside the color swatched on a lip, a hand, a fingertip, and a close-up of the applicator wand.
And the brand Color Key practically runs their entire massive business on this single template format. It's roughly 45% of their total visual output.
And the agents also found that skincare routine videos capture over 51% of all category engagement. You're not selling the bottle, you're selling the ritual.
So when you lay all this data out, the developer's earlier bug makes perfect sense. Fashion requires a 60% body fill OOTD shot. Beauty requires a 5-part swatch collage. Jewelry needs a macro zoom on dark slate.
They have fundamentally different visual grammars. A label swap cannot bridge that gap.
Which means the developer was forced to build bespoke sets of templates for each category.
But gathering all this great data creates a brand new engineering problem because the system architecture is still hardlocked to only 6 template slots per category.
Yeah, if you have 20 proven ways to sell makeup, how do you pick exactly 6?
This introduces a really painful principle in product design. The developer realized that, quote, reasonable isn't evidence.
That is such a brutal realization. But cutting is infinitely harder than picking. If you loosen the constraint from 6 to 8, feature creep happens immediately.
Right. If a feature makes logical sense, but you have no proof people use it, it dies. Let's look at some of the stuff that got cut because it's fascinating.
Yeah, let's do it.
For beauty, there was a template for a 3-column ingredient infographic. People obsess over skincare ingredients, so why did the agents kill that?
Well, 2 reasons. First, generative AI models just struggle to render complex molecular diagrams. They output garbled text.
Ah, right.
But more importantly, the top brand in that space, HFP, they don't even use complex 3-column infographics. They actually just use really simple single-page posters with massive bold text.
So the reasonable template was actually out of touch with what top brands really do. And then in fashion, there was the stitch detail or craft macro shot. As a shopper, I love seeing close-ups of fabric quality. Why didn't that survive?
Because there was zero merchant evidence for it. Extreme macro photography is heavily utilized by high-end luxury designers, but this platform is for everyday merchants. They don't use extreme macro craft shots to drive volume sales.
What about the height grid model shot, where you show the same jacket on 4 different models of varying heights? That seems incredibly useful for a buyer.
It is useful, but everyday merchants don't have the budget to hire 4 different models for every single item in their inventory. It's basically a blogger niche.
So every single one of those sounded reasonable, but lacked the hard evidence, which led to the developer's golden rule. If research can't surface at least 1 top-tier merchant using the template in a proven viral post, it doesn't get a slot.
It's a profound level of discipline. But, you know, this raises an important question. Even with all these brutal constraints, the developer is really candid that the system is still fundamentally unresolved.
Wait, really? Is the system not perfect now? They cross-validated the internet, they cut all the fluff. what is still broken?
Well, the six sets are still just qualitative inferences. They need real A-B testing once actual users arrive, specifically looking at the deselection rate and the regeneration rate.
Ah, okay. The deselection rate measures how often a user sees a template and intentionally clicks away, meaning the core idea is bad.
Right. And the regeneration rate measures how often a user accepts the template but forces the AI to re-roll the image again and again, meaning the idea is good, but the AI prompt needs tweaking.
And there's another massive blind spot, right? The system's overarching general fallback is still tied to the jewelry templates.
Yes, which is a ticking time bomb. If a user uploads a photo of a handcrafted ceramic bowl, the jewelry template might work. But the moment they upload a three-seater sofa or a plate of hot food,
you're going to get a sofa floating in a dark void with a coin next to it for scale.
Exactly. The visual grammar will completely shatter. And on top of that, the prompts still need hours of manual user acceptance testing to make sure they actually produce aesthetically pleasing art.
So this really synthesizes the big lesson of the episode for me. The dual nature of abstraction. Half the developer's original instinct was right. The infrastructure generalizes perfectly.
Oh, yeah. The API calls, the cloud storage, the billing system. That stays exactly the same whether you're rendering lipstick or a winter coat.
But the content does not generalize. Abstraction saves you from writing the same code three times, but it absolutely cannot save you from writing the same prompt three times.
And this leads to the developer's closing philosophy. They write that reversing a core judgment made 3 weeks ago isn't a sign of failure. It's the exact sign that the work is going correctly. Iteration is self-reversal.
Wow. We started this deep dive looking at a hilarious software bug, you know, a denim jacket turning into floating gemstones, and we ended up with this profound lesson on domain expertise. We learned the rigorous art of cutting reasonable features and the absolute necessity of cross-validating research.
It's a remarkable journey, and as we wrap up, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final question to mull over. Think about your own daily work or learning habits. Where are you relying on a simple label to understand something, while completely ignoring its unique underlying grammar? And what safe phase are you currently hiding behind, simply because you lack the data to make the real leap?
Such a great thought to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the abstractions in your own life, and we will see you next time.